At the legislature today, the co-chair of the Joint Legislative Oversight Commission on State Water Resources reacts to a report given today about the water in the nine counties affected by the chemical leak. And in the House today, the debate wasn't about the five bills that were voted on. Instead, the floor erupted over a resolution to allow members who are away serving on active military duty to vote on legislation. These stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. Testimony pertaining to the chemical leak continued in the Senate today, even after the chamber approved its bill to regulate above-ground storage facilities yesterday. A joint water commission heard from an environmental scientist continuing to do his own water quality testing throughout the contaminated distribution system. As Ashton Mara reports, lawmakers are now calling his results shocking.
By now, you've probably heard of crude MCHM, the chemical that spilled into the Elk River in early January, contaminating the drinking water of 300,000 West Virginians. And maybe you've even heard of PPH, the second chemical contained in the leaky tank at the Freedom Industries site. But almost 3 weeks after the leak, how much do we really know about these chemicals? Scott Simonton says not much, and certainly not enough.
Based on my experience, I would be shocked if MCHM and the contaminants resulting from this latest catastrophic event are the only ones emanating from that facility. It's a very old facility, old tanks, and again, in my experience, I could bet you that other things have leaked from that site.
Simonton says some of the biggest questions besides what and if any chemicals are still leaking into the river is what happens to these chemicals when they begin to react with the environment. What happens when they mix with chlorine in the water treatment facility? What happens when they mix with soaps or detergents in your home? What happens when the human body metabolizes them? Questions that don't have answers. Simonton says organic contaminants can often change into other things, meaning new chemicals in the water supply. But Simonton says it's not a question of could or maybe. He says these new chemicals are in the drinking water.
We know, for example, that methanol can break down to formaldehyde. So our concern was these breakdown products. Formaldehyde is a known human carcinogen. That's important. And so we thought, wow, we should be looking for formaldehyde. And sure enough, we have found formaldehyde in the water system.
Test results were positive for one site in downtown Charleston. A carcinogen that Simonton says is dangerous when inhaled, formaldehyde often leads to respiratory cancers.
We don't know what the concentration of is in air, but we can bet, well, I can guarantee you that the citizens of this valley are, at least in some instances, breathing formaldehyde. If they're taking a hot shower, this stuff is breaking down to formaldehyde in the shower or in the water system, and they're inhaling it.
The new revelations and new information Simonton provided the commission is something Senate Majority Leader Senator John Unger says shocked him and his fellow lawmakers.
The testimony today was quite disturbing, and I think the entire committee, the State Water Resource Commission, was kind of put back quite a bit, because that's not the information that we've been hearing as far as from the news media. So what he's testified today was the hard truth, and it definitely was very difficult.
Simonton told the commission the information state officials released in the days during the chemical leak, information about when the water was safe for use and consumption, he can't find what evidence they had to back it. Unger was concerned with that information as well.
What concerns me is the information they were giving out as if they did know. And that's also was brought up, that, you know, where they were saying, go ahead and drink it. It's okay, safe now. Well, we've heard from both on Friday from the U.S. Chemical Board that it wasn't, and now today with Dr. Simonton that it's not safe to drink. And so, to me, I think that that's where the disappointment is that these authorities are saying things without having proper science backing up. They do not know, but they're going ahead and saying it anyhow, and we're still uncertain about that, even exposing people even more and also elevating the risk of people's health even more by doing this. So we really have to get a handle on this and really truly tell the people the truth about what's going on with it. It's their lives, and we need to tell them the truth.
Yesterday, senators passed Senate Bill 373, creating new regulations for similar above-ground storage facilities, and called it step one in preventing future water contamination. But Unger says figuring out the health effects, that has to be part of step one as well.
We need to do it simultaneously. We need to be moving forward. I mean, the whole idea of Senate Bill 373 is to make sure it doesn't happen again anywhere in West Virginia. Now we have to look at what do we do in response to now it's happened. And this is an ongoing situation that's unraveling as we get more and more information. And how do we help those individuals, that those people that have been exposed to it, which is all of us here in Charleston and Kanawha Valley.
Going forward, Unger says lawmakers will rely on the medical community to monitor and figure out ways to treat anyone exposed to the chemical. His commission hopes to hear from the Department of Health and Human Resources on monitoring in the next week. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in the Senate.
Now, in response to this presentation, Dr. Letitia Tierney, Commissioner for the State Bureau for Public Health, calls the findings unfounded and says they do not speak to the health and safety of West Virginians. Tierney says the World Health Organization states formaldehyde can be created through the normal breakdown cycles of plants and animals and is naturally produced in small amounts in the human body. She says it easily dissolves in water and does not stay present for long. The Bureau for Public Health says they are not aware of the specifics of Dr. Simonton's study, and he was not part of the state's internal testing team. The House's bill to aid small businesses during states of emergency saw significant changes in the Senate today, putting lawmakers in control of the aid instead of the governor. The original West Virginia Small Business Emergency Act included a laundry list of potential aid written into emergency rule by the director of the Department of Homeland Security and approved by the governor. But the chair of the Senate Economic Development Committee, Senator Bob Williams, says the bill was too broad and too many details needed to be considered during a state of emergency. Instead, the committee is proposing a small business emergency loan program that can be enacted through executive order. The program is capped at a total of $2 million and is only available for businesses with less than 50 employees who are impacted by a declared state of emergency. The interest rate is set at one-half of the federal prime, so the rate can fluctuate.
It's simply going to be a loan program that will be kind of a micro-loan program, small amounts, perhaps up to $5,000 per loan, that will help small businesses get over the hump in case of a state of emergency. Now, most of these don't last. The critical part of the state of emergency doesn't last for a long time. So we're going to give them 2 years to pay the loans off. We're going to allow the loan applications to come in within 90 days of the close of the state of emergency. So when the governor says the state of emergency no longer exists, then they'll have 90 days to go through their records and see what kind of losses they have and then apply for the loan. So we're going to just make it a small business loan program for emergency situations.
Williams says the governor has access to $2 million in a civil contingency fund, which is a possible source of funding for the program. If the governor should need more than $2 million, the bill requires him to call the legislature into special session to appropriate the funds. The House of Delegates passed five bills today, among them a Senate bill to supplement appropriations from lottery net profits to the DNR and the Bureau of Senior Services, a bill that would prohibit an employer from requesting or requiring that an employee or applicant disclose any user name, password to access a personal account, and a bill that restricts parental rights of child custody and visitation when the child was conceived as a result of a sexual assault or sexual abuse. However, the main point of debate on the floor today was over House Resolution 6. Aaron Payne reports the discussion was about a Republican member who wasn't there.
The House currently has one member that cannot participate in voting or House activities due to serving in the military. Delegate Joshua Nelson has been absent for the second session of the 81st legislature while on active duty. House Resolution 6 would allow participation in House proceedings and voting by electronic teleconferencing for Nelson and future members not physically present due to their military service. Due to the wording of the movement, a green vote would oppose the resolution and a red vote would be in support of the resolution. Debate between the two sides arose with over 10 delegates speaking on their personal stance on the matter, including the resolution's sponsor, Delegate Jim Butler.
Technology's changing. We have iPads, we have Skype, we have Facebook. We're on an automated system here. We're doing a lot of things now that people, 100 years ago had no concept of. So I think that this, another thing, West Virginia here, we are, per capita, the highest percentage of military veterans in the country. So wouldn't it be fitting if West Virginia did this?
We owe it to our constituents and to our citizens to show up at the Capitol and be accountable and be present for them so that they can interact with us. This is not something we should do via conference call. This is not something we should participate in the debates when we have time. We should be here at the Capitol and be here on the floor of the House like it's demanded that we be at your seat to vote. We can't stand out behind the chamber and vote. You have to be here and your name's on the board. So we're accountable to our people.
I think that it is something that is extending what we can do here in this chamber, the honor to those members who are serving our country in the military to also be able to participate in this process. And I don't see anything inconsistent with those duties. In fact, I think those are entirely public service oriented duties that are entirely consistent with one another. And I would respect any member of either party who would want to be able to fulfill both of those duties to the extent that we can make them able to do that.
If you're not using secured equipment by the military, it's a vulnerability. What I'm saying is somebody could call on their personal cell phone. It comes in here, voice over IP, and although we broadcast everything that we do here, we could be creating a breach with our server from people who are trying to get in that would want to put viruses in our server, that would want to wreck our server, that could actually shut this legislature down, could shut the state down.
The motion to reject the resolution was adopted by a vote of 66 to 29. Well after the vote and the passage of five bills, the debate continued on with Delegate John Schott pointing out a similar situation that occurred in the Senate.
At the request of Senator Unger, unanimous consent being granted, Senator Wells, who is currently on active duty with the United States Navy Reserve in Afghanistan, was permitted to vote by voice in accordance with Article 6, Section 44 of the West Virginia Constitution through electronic means for the election of the Senate President as required by Article 6, Section 24 of the West Virginia Constitution to fill the vacancy in the office caused by the resignation of the senior senator from the 7th District, which suggests to me how quickly we've abandoned our admiration of the Senate and how inconsistent we are in our actions here in the House.
However, Delegate Swartzmiller was quick to point out what made that situation different.
To clarify that was not a floor session where staff was gathered, press was gathered, staff was gathered. That was a one-time caucus vote.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
In a moment, we'll learn if innovation and entrepreneurship are making gains in the state. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today. Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 446 to require an agency to allow a grievant a reasonable time for a representative to be summoned and appear, and to clarify that participation in grievance proceedings is considered work time. Senate Bill 447 to provide an additional circuit judge in Mingo County. Senate Bill 448 to provide a one-time supplement to retired teachers and public employees 70 years of age or older, equal to 3% of their retirement benefits. And Senate Bill 449 to change the name of the Division of Veterans Affairs to the Department of Veterans Assistance and change the position of director to secretary to reflect it as a cabinet-level position. There are no bills up for passage or on second reading on the Senate floor tomorrow. It was Innovation and Entrepreneurship Day at the Capitol today. A wide variety of West Virginia companies, organizations, groups, and agencies showcased West Virginia's innovation economy. Joining us tonight are two members of this innovation community. Ann Barth is the executive director of Tech Connect West Virginia, a statewide economic development organization that works with innovative people and ideas to foster and promote innovation-based businesses. Also with us is Dr. Marjorie Dara, Associate Professor of Mathematics at WVU and CEO of eTouch Sciences, based in Grafton in Taylor County, a business that has added touch to science and math education in the state. Ladies, welcome. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
Dr. Dara, I'm so interested in hearing about your business, eTouch Sciences, and how touching can help students learn better about math and science. Tell us the story.
Okay, Beth. It started about 13 years ago, believe it or not. I was asked to work in the virtual environments lab at WVU in the summer. So I was introduced to a technology called haptics technology. And haptic technology allows you to feel virtual objects, just like a computer screen allows you to see objects and speakers allow you to hear something coming out of the computer. A haptic device actually allows you to feel virtual objects that are rendered.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was introduced to this technology, I thought, wouldn't children love to use this technology in the classroom? And so from that time on, 13 years, it's been my journey to getting this into the market for K-12 students to be able to use.
All right. Now, you have a device in front of you here. What is this? Is this part of eTouch Sciences?
Well, this is the device that we employ. This is the Novant Falcon, and it is a game controller, and it really works like a 3D mouse. Where a regular mouse, you can go left and right and up and down, this will allow you to go left, right, in and out, and up and down. So mm-hmm. you have three dimensions. Mm-hmm. So what it allows us to do is to develop software. Our company, Touch Sciences, develops the software, and we like to say that we have redeemed this for education purposes.
Okay.
It's used in the gaming market.
Okay. All right. So how does touch help a student grasp science and math?
Well, for one thing, all of the software we make is totally accessible to students who have lost their vision, who are blind or visually impaired. But it also helps students who are tactile learners, because some students need to touch things to be able to understand them.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's helpful for students who need more a better way to, they may not be able to understand it unless they have different things presented to them in mm-hmm. different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So they like different modalities mm-hmm. in use.
Because all students learn it a different way. And
right.
some people want to touch and feel and lift to feel it all out before they can really grasp the concept of this particular scientific or math concept.
Right, exactly.
All right. So how's business?
Well, it's doing great. We were lucky enough to get a small business innovation research grant from the U.S. Department of Education. And in 2.5 years, this grant has allowed us to bring a product from conception to marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
So we have sales now, and we're moving forward with this.
Congratulations. So this is an example of innovation and entrepreneurship that Tech Connect tries to promote.
That's exactly right. And I want to say that Dr. Dara was the winner of our Startup Innovation of the Year award last October because she has been able to bring this to market. Even though she learned about the technology 13 years ago, it takes a long time to develop these types of new products and get them to market. But winning that SBIR award helped facilitate that and provide the funding needed to round out that development and actually get it to market. So we're really excited by the type of example that her company sets for others in West Virginia who are working on technology developments and struggling to transfer that technology and bring it to market.
So you come to the legislature every year for Innovation and Entrepreneurship Day to show this off. What do you want the legislature to do?
Well, we feel it's very important that the West Virginia Research Trust Fund continue to receive funding. The $50 million that was originally allocated has been distributed between WVU and Marshall. And we know that research and development drives the economy and drives innovation. So it's very important to keep that West Virginia Research Trust Fund, or Bucks for Brains, as we know it, funded. And that's in the beginning of this innovation life cycle, where ideas come from. On the other end, when they have great ideas that need funding to stand up a startup company or whatever, the West Virginia Capital Access Program has been going on the last 2 years under the direction of the West Virginia Jobs Investment Trust, utilizing funds from the U.S. Treasury Department. Mm-hmm. And they've been very successful at creating or retaining almost 1,000 jobs with this $13 million in funding. And we'd like to see if there's a way the state could continue to put some funding into the Capital Access Program moving forward so that those types of loans can still be made to help a business expand or to help a business get launched. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the legislature understands this new innovation economy and how they have a role in it?
I think we're really making good progress in that, and I know there's a new committee in the House of Delegates that's looking at small business. Mm-hmm. Speaker Miley formed this new committee. Mm-hmm. I think they are getting it, and having Dr. Dara and others like her be at the Capitol showcasing what they're doing in innovation and technology really brings home the point that this is not just a concept in West Virginia, but it's a reality, and it's happening throughout the state. I love that she's from Grafton, putting Taylor County on the map in innovation.
Are any schools in West Virginia using eTouch Sciences?
Yes, we've actually been testing in many schools, but West Virginia School for the Blind, for one, because this software is totally accessible. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you asked. Yes, mm-hmm. I'd like to thank them for adopting our software. And also there have been several other schools who've been testing for us and cited classrooms.
We'll look for more information about eTouch Sciences and your work. Anne Barth and Dr. Marjorie Dara, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today. Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 4367, the West Virginia Energy Efficiency Resource Act, for electric utilities to offer energy efficiency and peak demand reduction programs to their customers and to integrate demand-side resources into long-term resource planning. House Bill 4368, at the request of the Division of Motor Vehicles, to extend the renewal cycle of driver's licenses from 5 years to 8 years and provide an option to renew driver's licenses and identification cards online without requiring an in-person appearance. House Bill 4370, to provide that used car dealers must provide vehicle history reports to persons interested in a used vehicle which has been the subject of a manufacturer's recall. House Bill 4371, to make the theft of a traffic sign or traffic signal a felony. The bill finds that the theft is a reckless endangerment to the safety of persons and the public. And House Bill 4373, to help improving the offering of driver's education courses to secondary school students by providing options for permitted instructors, allowing courses outside of the regular school schedule. The bill also removes the requirement for the state superintendent of schools to prescribe the course of instruction, license, and periodically inspect commercial driver education schools. And there are no bills up for passage or on second reading in the House tomorrow either. This has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow, we'll talk about deer farming and other agricultural issues with West Virginia Agriculture Commissioner Walt Helmick. We welcome your comments. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at WV Public News and find us on Facebook. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the legislature today provided by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at wvhtf.org, and by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at wvaflcio.org. You can also watch the legislature today weeknights, 6:30 and also at 11:30 p.m. on West Virginia PBS. West Virginia Public Radio, telling West Virginia's story, and online at wvpublic.org.